Hey, welcome to Life 2.0 Podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you joining me from anywhere and everywhere around planet Earth. Time to go up the down staircase in the outdoor. Make sense out of the senseless. If at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Hold on to your friggin' lug nuts, kids, because it's time for an overhaul. Every time I drop the virtual needle on that 15 seconds of taking care of business, my blood pressure goes up about 97 points for various reasons. Is the first concert I ever went to in person, a live concert, was the Bachman-Turner Overdrive blowout at the Chicago Stadium back in 19, Richard Nixon was president, back in 1973. And I'll never forget it. You know, you have these moments. I actually wrote a book called Every Moment Matters, and while this wasn't included in the book, it could have been, where you have these things take place and they just stay lodged in your memory forever. And that concert's one of them. You know, BTO was becoming a thing on the radio. That song in particular was a big deal. Myself and a few of my buddies got together. We convinced one of the dads to give us a ride to the Chicago Stadium instead of having to take a bus. Can you imagine that? We're going to take a bus to the stadium to go spend 3 hours with these guys from Canada called Bachman-Turner Overdrive. And the one guy's dad was a funeral director, an undertaker, a mortician. And he took us in the hearse. And you talk about a scene. I can still see it in my mind. We pull up. The Chicago Stadium was this monolithic structure in Chicago. It's long gone, but it was quite the thing. And, you know, this flurry and buzz of activity around the building because there's a concert that night. It's friggin' BTO in Chicago. Big deal back in the day. And here we are in the back of the hearse, splayed out, right where you put the caskets. And he pulls up and he puts his flashers on and everybody's looking on the street like, what's this hearse doing here? And he gets out, he's wearing a suit and tie like he's at work, you know. I think he had sunglasses on at night too, this guy. And he opens up the back of the hearse and everybody's kind of looking and we come crawling out. It was our rock star entrance. So much fun. So anyway, when I hear that song, that's where I go. And for years, when I was on the radio in the early times from, you know, 97, 98, 99, even into the 2000s, I think, I pretty much used that same song. It's so lodged into my mind about how good I felt when I went to that concert. And to this day, if I'm in the car, and tell me you don't do this as well, everybody's got their song, everybody's got their playlist. And when something on your playlist cranks up on the radio gets cranked up a little louder. I mean, last week this came on, Magic Matt Allen dropped the needle on this on the 70s channel on Sirius XM, and I had it up to like 35, and it was really warm out, and I had the windows down. And, you know, so music is a time machine. It took me right back to the old Chicago Stadium and listening to Bachman-Turner Overdrive, and they're still touring. I mean, there's variations. Randy Bachman's still around. He's still one of the best guitar players ever. So that's my homage to that time every time I start this show. Glad to have you with me. I'm so excited on so many different levels. First and foremost, spring is just about here. The difference in our yard from last Saturday to this Saturday is remarkable. A few warm days and everything wakes up again. My mom loved this time of the year so much, and so I think of her as this is all taking place. And as the flowers open up and the birds start moving around a little bit more and the little crawly things are making their presence known, it's just the beckoning and harbinger of spring. And that's all about renewal, that the winter grip is lessening. Now, I will tell you, there wasn't much of a grip here this past winter. I think I used the snowblower once. I maybe have used the shovel three or four times just to clear off the driveway. And there is a shift going on. I'm not going to get into all that in this show, but it's no doubt in my mind. You know, there's a difference between weather and climate. Be clear on that. But I'll stop right there. We're in climate change. It has little to do with the weather, and yet it's still a byproduct weather that we experience from climate change. So that is different in all parts of the world. But, you know, it's interesting. You hear people say, wow, it sure is warm out this time of year. This is unusual. Yeah, it is. No doubt about that. And I'm a week away from a major event that is 10 years running. I've brought up on the show a few times. I went to a high school in the city and grammar school, grew up in the city of Chicago for the most part. And my 4 years at Schurz High School on the northwest side of the city were just impressive as hell to me. I mean, I came into my own a little bit there. You know, you go into high school and everybody has their own experience. I get that. But it was something important. You know, there's just, it was just this capsule of time, those 48 months you're in high school. And then you take off summer, so it's not even 48 months, right? Maybe 40, maybe 38. And when you do that and go through that kind of that transition out into the real world, years later, you look back and I go, well, it wasn't half bad. And I've been very, very, very fortunate to stay in touch with a lot of the people that I went to school with back then, both grammar and high school and college. But about a decade ago, a bunch of us went to the funeral of one of our former coaches, the late, great Ray Smith. And after that funeral, like so many, we decided we shouldn't just show up at funerals and say, how's it going? Because one of us could be in the box one day and we don't want to wait for that. So what came out of just a few broken down football players and wrestlers getting together to say goodbye to our coach has become this phenomenon, for lack of a better term, over the past 10 years. It is the largest all-school reunion in Chicago. And that's saying a lot when you think about how many high schools there are in this city. And it's also a fundraiser for Schurz because it is, well, the school looks the same. The population is different. The neighborhood's different. And the needs are different than they were when I went to school in the mid-70s. And I think that's one of the great challenges for people across the board, whether it's talking about your, you know, glory days in high school or lack of, and how life is now. We look back on those times with great fondness and say, wow, wasn't it much better, easier, simpler, cleaner, better, whatever? Truth is, it probably wasn't, but our view of it was different than it is now. And so we raise a lot of money for Schurz, and we just kind of, you know, do a little tuck pointing with that cash. We help out wherever we can at the school to fill in the blanks for kids that are homeless, kids that need things, some of the sports programs, the library, whatever we can do to kind of lift that and support that and keep the bricks in place, we're all about that. So that is next Saturday for us. And I get to work with people who are friends of mine on this behind the scenes and in front of the scenes and all the rest. And, you know, we're expecting well over 200 alumni from parts known and unknown to descend on Chicago. They'll spend the afternoon at the school, and most of them have not been there since they graduated in 19 fill in the blank. And then we have this huge blowout at La Villa Restaurant, which is the best Italian restaurant in the city of Chicago, period. And so if you're not from here and you come here, you want to go to La Villa. And so all of this is next Saturday. So this is kind of the calm before the storm for myself and the team of us that put this together. And when I think of the ripple effect of how this all started with the death of one of our coaches, someone we have so much respect for, and where it's come from out of that, it's truly mind-bending to me. It really is. I mean, we raised thousands and thousands and thousands, well over 50 grand we've raised in the last few years. And the kids that get the benefit from that, we don't know them. That's the big gimme, right? I mean, that's how we pay it back, by paying it forward and paying it forward by paying it back. It's the same thing. It's this constant give and take. So we are so cranked up for this. We took last year off because, you know, we did it 9 years in a row. It gets to be a lot. We took a year off. We even worked our way through the COVID. We did a virtual, it's called the Bulldog Bash. We did a virtual bash. I got to tell you, you missed a good one. So on the night we would have normally had the physical event, we had people all over the world on their computers connected live on our Facebook page. And I had a couple of, you know, brown pops going, and it was very interesting. So then you got people checking in from literally from England and Ireland, and we have alumni from, you know, like Chattanooga and you name it, Montreal, and everybody's kind of connected. So we, even then, virtually, we were able to pull it off. So a lot of fun. My only bittersweet memory in all this stuff is the guy that I started all this with many years ago, Phil, passed away in 2020, and I was pretty much done at that point. I'm like, you work on something with somebody. We were really good tag team partners. We went to grammar school together and high school together, and we, you know, on and off over the years. And he was only 62 when he passed, and I was finished. I said, what's the point? Until a good friend who's on the team, Marilyn, says, listen, you know, idiot, this isn't about you two guys. It's about the much bigger picture, and she was correct on that. So we got back in the saddle, And of course, it would be great to have him here, and I miss him. And that's where we're going to leave that at this point. This show today is a little bit about what I've been yakking around already for 11 and a half minutes. It's about winning. And it's not about sports per se, and yet it is. And yesterday, I was working on a bunch of audio stuff. I had, I don't know, 4 or 5 podcasts I produced this week. And while I love doing this stuff, even I get an overload of audio. I just don't want to hear anything anymore. I just, nothing. I spend all this time editing and making, you know, tuning things up and putting it together. And I love being an audio architect, but there are some days I'm done. And I just happened to see a video put up by Dan Kramer, who is the son of Jerry Kramer, the great Green Bay Packer guard and Hall of Famer from 1970-ish, somewhere in there, 71, 72, when he had already retired after Super Bowl II. And it was called The Habit of Winning. This little film, it's 30 minutes long. And come to find out that some Packer fan found a reel-to-reel tape of this in a garage sale and got it to Dan, and Dan was able to digitize it and then put it up on YouTube. So I sat here yesterday afternoon for about 30 minutes and watched this basically, you know, kind of flickering film that was sitting in somebody's basement for God knows how many years. And it was Jerry, a much younger Jerry, he's 88 years old now, talking to some teammates about what they had learned on the field and how that had translated to their lives off the field. Of course, all of them were under the Lombardi umbrella, right? These are guys that were, you know, not very good till Vince Lombardi showed up, and somehow he was able to extract and pull from them championship material. But again, you know, the average career in the National Football League is about 4 years. Baseball's maybe a little longer, about 6. The NBA is about 6. You know, these are very short careers. And so while I am all about, you know, getting your just due, the bloated salaries these days, you know, ensure that most of the athletes, don't have to scramble, scratch, or dig to feed themselves. Back when these other guys played Jerry and his friends, it was a different deal. You know, it was a whole different deal. So in this film, Jerry has retired. He's, and you can find it on YouTube. It's called The Habit of Winning. And he's going, talking to some of his former teammates about this whole notion of what you learn here can be applied over here. And he's talking to Jimmy Taylor, the great fullback, and Paul Hornung, the great running back, and Fuzzy Thurston, his other guard on the other side, left guard. He was right guard. And he's talking to Willie Davis, the great defensive end. And I believe he's also talking to Henry Jordan, the defensive tackle. All of them are gone except Jerry. That was the first thing that was that jumped out at me, was everybody he talked to in that film have gone on ahead of him. He's the last man standing. And in so many ways, I think there might be maybe 3 or 4 Dave Robinsons still around. There's Jerry. Not many guys left from those early Lombardi year Packers. And the reason that's so important is because in the world of sports, there was no such thing as the Super Bowl until these guys came along. That's when AFL and NFL played each other. And Lombardi had taken this ragtag group of guys and built them into, you know, dinosaurs at their time and just ruled the National Football League. He went around and talked to each one of these guys where they lived. Now, he knew them, obviously, for years. But Kramer has the ability to talk to people that he's known for a long time as if he doesn't know them. He's able to ask them questions that get them talking. That's a real talent. Sometimes it can get too inside. One of the podcasts I produced this week, I had to caution the host and say, you know, this is great, but it's really great only between the two of you. You have to expand the questions and things like that to include people that are not in on it, right? Jerry has that ability. So he was asking them, how did what you learn in football help you off the field? Every one of the guys that he talked to were incredibly successful businessmen and family men. And he asked them questions that led to those conclusions, but you could see it coming from everybody's different background and how all of these guys, for the most part, grew up with nothing. And they became something because of a catalyst named Vince Lombardi. And all Vince Lombardi really did was take some of the ancient teachings and the ancient ideas of how you become a better human being and apply them to these guys who believed it. They lived it, hook, line, and sinker, right in the cheek. He drilled it into them to the point where all they could do is perform at a higher level. There was no room for slack. So in a day and age where life coaching is a thing, I mean, gosh, I'm trying to remember, it's got to be 3-4 years ago now. I got an email from a young woman who had seen my TED Talk in Ontario in 2018, and it was on YouTube as everything else is. This is called MeTube. It's not YouTube. It's about me. It should be MeTube. Anyway, she sent me this note saying she was so inspired by what I said, and it's great, thank you very much, that she's decided to become a life coach, and she's going to get certified to become a life coach. She's 26. And I thought to myself, I got shoes older than you, sister. I mean, seasoning makes you a coach in your life. I think that certification does that. And I just went back and forth with her a little bit, and I realized that that's kind of where we're at as a species. That somehow if you get certified in something, even though you may not have lived enough to apply it to yourself, you can go out and tell other people what to do. And I always think about life coaches as someone who has just been through the battle time and time and time again. Jim Carrey used to say, probably still does, I don't even want to talk to somebody unless they've had their ass kicked a half dozen times and lived through it. Because that's where the lessons are at. You don't learn this stuff by certification. You learn it by application. So he's talking to all these guys, and they're all saying the same thing in their own way about discipline and determination and drive and energy and performance. And all of that stuff is inside of each of us. Whether it comes out or not, that's the deal. So high performers, people who are, quote, living the lives that they've chosen to live in a way that enhances not only their existence, but the people around them, they're all inward driven. There may be some outward signs like, oh, I got to go do this over here or do that over there. But in the end and in the beginning, it's an inside job. I mean, you got to light yourself on fire from within in order to keep burning and keep going enough to move forward. And so I'm listening to this, like I said, from 1970, 71, and 30 minutes finishes up. Great to see Jerry, long sideburns, young man. God, he had to be in his 30s, I would think, at that point. And I decided to call him. So I finished watching this thing. I put all my audio stuff away. I call Mr. Kramer out there in Boise, and he answers the phone the same way every time I call. John. What's happening? And I told him I'd been watching this film, and he was just, wait, what? How, you know? So he knew Dan had it, but he didn't know it was up on YouTube. And he lit up like a proverbial Christmas tree on the phone. You know, he was sitting on his backside in Boise, probably watching reruns of I Love Lucy. I don't know. But we got into this subject, and all of a sudden he just lit up. And I find myself this morning, even though I've had some coffee, I'm getting lit up because it's lit from within. There's something about talking about these concepts that jack up my shorts. So next thing you know, here we are going back and forth about, of course, Jerry at his level, Green Bay Packers, 10 years, you know, NFL all-century team, Packer Hall of Fame, Canton Football Hall of Fame, high level. 6-7 books. I mean, just what a life he's lived, all because some little short Italian guy said, you could do better. And he told him it over and over and over and over and over again until Jerry absorbed it. It became part of his belief system. And I remember telling Jerry yesterday, I said, you know, it's interesting because while I've had none of those accolades, of course, didn't play pro football, I played semi-pro football, which is just basically semi-parole football, if you get down to it. But I know what it's like to play football, and then I know what it's like to not play football, and to take the lessons from football and apply them to my life. So it doesn't matter if I was in the Super Bowl or the toilet bowl, it's still the same thing. There are still these universal themes that you can apply to your life to make things work. And if you don't apply them, it doesn't work. It's just the bottom line. Listen, every Saturday morning when I get in here, I am so excited to do this. Part of it is working during the week on other people's stuff and helping them get out into the world, which I really enjoy. And the other part of me is this is how it all started for me, behind a microphone in 1997. And I haven't stopped since. There's been some ups and downs here and there, a couple breaks here and there. I have faltered many times, but never wavered. And therein lies some lessons for me. So whether I'm behind this microphone every Saturday, because it's a discipline for me, I'm getting this out of my head and out of my heart into the microphone. And it goes out into the world. I don't know where it goes, how it affects people one way or the other. But this is what I came to do. And whether I'm talking to 3 of you, 3,000 of you, or 3 million of you, it's all the same to me. You have to play, in my opinion, that common denominator game with yourself. I do. Tonight, I will be on WGN Radio here in Chicago with the legendary Steve and Johnny talking about the Randy Hundley book that I wrote called Iron Man. And the discipline, the drive, the energy, the willingness, the perseverance to write books is formidable. Anybody who had me as an English student back in the day is probably shaking their head somewhere going, how does this happen with this guy? But I was able to take those universal strengths and apply it to so many areas of my life that the results are astounding even to me. They just are. So when I was talking to Kramer yesterday, we're going back and forth and getting ready to wrap our conversation up. He said, you know, John, my life has been magical. My life has been incredible. And he said, and a lot of it has been predictable. I put myself in positions to win over and over and over again. Doesn't mean you always win, but if you put yourself in the position to win, you have a better shot at it than not putting yourself in the position to win at all. And I think a lot of people don't want to even attempt to get into that position because it's a scary place. You could lose. You could lose everything. I'm going to tell you something. I've had some profound moments on this calling / career of mine. And not all of them were good, but they were all profound. They were all important on some level. And I can remember a time when I had donated a kidney to my daughter in 2002, which was the benchmark of my life. If I did nothing else, that was enough. And that was in July of 2002. And I had just signed a deal to go in 80 markets in the Western United States through Talk One Network. Literally a week before this transplant was to take place. And I thought, I'm just going to bounce back and I'll take a week off and get back in the studio. Not so much. And it really ground me down. You know, all of it kind of, when I was on a roll and it kind of just come to this really important pivot point, and energetically, spiritually, emotionally, it took a lot out of me. Best thing I've ever done in my whole life. And the most difficult thing as well. So I think I took a couple, 3 months off on it, but and Talk One Network's like, we're not waiting for you. So I had to kind of hasten my return, and it didn't work out. I got back and, you know, I had to let some of the people that worked for me go because the money wasn't coming in. And I was doing a lot of this myself. Not like, I wish I would have had this technology back then. It would have been a lot easier. But anyway, I still pushed it. And then I realized at the point where I'm done. I physically can't do this anymore. I'm not in that place. And so the contract was void and I shut down shop on something I'd been working on 5 years at that point, 6 years, I guess. And I'll never forget being in my office on the third floor of the Ludington Suites in beautiful downtown Escanaba and doing my show that I knew was the end of it. Like, I had to clear my office out. And it was this foreboding thing ahead of me. And I remember having a couple friends come. We took everything out of my office, put it all in storage. I was turning the keys in, and I just sat on the floor in an empty office that I had built for 6 years and felt like the ultimate failure on the planet. How could I have been in this position over here where things were rolling, and then the opportunity to help save my daughter's life was paramount and right there, and here I am in an empty office. They don't add up to me. So, really important phone call I got about a week or so later. Cheryl Richardson, who is a fantastic speaker and author, and one of the few people, along with Steve Rizzo and Wayne Dyer and a few others, that were guests of mine first, became friends. We all stayed in touch afterwards. And Cheryl called me to check in on me. So this is early 2003. And how you doing and this and that. And I said, well, I'm kind of struggling. You know, I'm not doing this and I'm not doing this and this. And all that stuff was there. She let me get all of that out. She said, John, you've fallen into one of the biggest traps people can fall into. And you're too young and too early in the game to be in that spot. I said, what are you talking about? She said, you've equated what you do with who you are. They're not the same thing. Don't confuse who you are as a human being with what you do for a living. They're not the same thing. Over time, of course, that happens. They meld together. And when they're separate, we're not sure what the F to do because we're not doing what we used to do. And when she told me that, a little tiny light bulb went off in the corner. Bing! Don't confuse who you are with what you do. And that has been a paramount lesson for me over the years. Because at the time I'm sitting on the floor in this empty office, I couldn't know that just 36 months later, I'd be paid a nice six-figure salary to help build the Oprah Radio Network. I could not see that at that certain point. But those things had to happen for the other things to happen. And sometimes the things that happen that are negative and difficult and challenging and terrible are simply in disguise to open up the opportunities that await down the line. You have to go through the shit to get down the creek, right? So as I'm sitting here this morning and the sun is rising in the east and my office is being illuminated and I got the coffee going and the on-air signs all lit up and I'm coming to the end of, I don't know how many times I've sat behind this microphone in almost 30 years and pushed this stuff out in the world, I know that I am living what I'm here to do. But I no longer confuse what I do with who I am. When I'm not doing it, I'm okay. I'm this other guy too. That's why I spread myself out of events and things. My whole thing is to leave this space and place better, if at all possible, than it was before I got here. Period. End of story. And that shows up in a lot of different ways. So the habit of winning comes from discipline and perseverance and dedication to duty and ideals and things that are not often fun, but they're fundamental. And in a time where you can get 14 quick steps to be rich or 27 ways to do this, or forget that. It's all mouth candy, in my opinion. Be dedicated to your craft and be disciplined in doing it and have perseverance for your projects and don't quit. Just find another route. So it was so great to see Jerry as a young man and then talk to my friend who's now 88 years young. He's still working on projects. He's still got things going on. Maybe that's part of his secret, is to have purpose. Just don't confuse it with who you are. I wanted to send you out with a little piano meditation this morning. I got to tell you, here's a real-time thing. You know, as the sun's out, the birds are coming looking for their breakfast. So there's a robin staring in the window. I mean, I don't think he can see in here because of the way the sun is. But it's about that time in the morning. We're like, come on, big guy. We want our food here. So I got to get to them in just a second. But my friend David Stoddard, longtime pal, I think he's a phenomenal musician. He wrote a song quite a few years ago. I can't even hardly pronounce it. It's like Kring Klubier Braut. And apparently it's a street in like Iceland or something where he visited. He saw the sign. He learned about the street. He writes this song. There's no lyrics. It's all piano. But it is a meditation that I use in rotation, along with a few other people, when I'm working, when I'm doing print work, I have this on in my ear real low because it somehow moves me. It keeps me rolling in a place that I need to go to in order to get things done. So I thought I would not keep it to myself this morning. Here's my friend David Stoddard to take you out. I hope the rest of your day is fantastic and be well. Safe travels. Keep the faith.